Have you heard about Meta, formerly known as Facebook, blocking Canadian news? They had previously warned that they would take action on this if a new law was passed in Canada, and it seems now that they're following through. Join me on this episode covering my monthly newsletter, and I'll explain its relevance to my business. So welcome to Plants Dig Soil, a podcast about realistic regen ag. I'm your host, Scott Gillespie, and I'm an agronomist from the Western Canadian Prairies, specializing in climate-smart agriculture. I discuss scientifically proven practices that benefit the planet, and just as importantly, farmers' economic sustainability. So be sure to visit my website, www.plantsdigsoil.com, for resources and information about the services that I offer. So this is what Meta has published on their site. For Canadian news outlets, this means that news links and content posted by news publishers and broadcasters in Canada will no longer be viewable to people in Canada. We are identifying news outlets based on the legislative definitions and guidance from the Online News Act. For international news outlets, this means news publishers and broadcasters outside of Canada will continue to be able to boast news links and content. However, that content will not be viewable by people in Canada. For our Canadian community, this means people in Canada will no longer be able to view or share news content on Facebook and Instagram, including news articles and audiovisual content posted by news outlets. And that was live as of the recording of this on August 9th. And I have the source linked in the transcript. Now, the reason that I invest significant effort in building email lists is that email communication offers distinct advantages compared to social media. With email, I can send messages to email addresses from any provider as long as I have permission to do so. Once I hit send, the email is out in the world and I can't retract it or edit it afterwards. As long as you're sure not to mark it as spam, it will come through. There are no algorithms deciding how many of my subscribers get the message. I don't have to pay for them to push it out to more people. It just goes out as I send it. And podcasts work similarly. Once published, they're accessible on major platforms like Apple, Spotify, and Google, but any app that seeks the feed can find it and share it. They don't block episodes. Everything goes up. I also cannot recall it once it's out. There is transparency out there that once I say something, the record stands. Now, in contrast, social media and search engines like Google operate under their own rules, determining what content can be posted or suppressed. Now, currently, only Meta, or Facebook, enforces such control, but Google and other platforms might follow suit in the future. While I don't think I fit the definition of a news company, if a company decided that I did, I could very easily get blocked from anyone posting any of my links. Now, I would love to continue expanding this list. Social media platforms and even Google might block me at any time. So if you received this message or this podcast episode as I'm recording it through a forward or someone shared it to you, please consider subscribing to the podcast or to the links that I'll have in the show description of my email newsletter and my LinkedIn newsletter. I send those updates only once a month, and I assure you that every time I'll bring valuable information. Well, I'm aware that platforms like LinkedIn could change their policies too. I trust Microsoft more than billionaire-owned companies with questionable motives. So thanks for continuing to support me, and please subscribe or add yourself to the list or send it off to someone else who you think could benefit. Now I'm going to move into the content summaries from July. These are the episodes that I put out last month, and these are some quick summaries of what I covered in those. So first of all was episode 527, Farming with Soil Life. I recently had the opportunity to read and review the thought-provoking book, Farming with Soil Life by the Xerces Society. This book is a game changer because it challenges the conventional view of killing soil life for farming and highlighting the significance of nurturing soil health for sustainable agriculture. The book starts by exploring the geological origin of soil and how chemical and biological factors contribute to its development. Understanding this process lays the foundation for grasping what constitutes a healthy soil. Whether it's on farm or in a forest, a healthy soil is one that serves our goals, supporting robust crop growth or a thriving ecosystem, while ensuring its preservation for future generations. The book presents different methods to assess soil health, such as observing soil inhabitants and their activities. While conventional soil health tests are still developing, the book's emphasis on direct observation and plant response is practical and informative. One compelling argument is the need to reduce pesticide use. The book delves into the concept of sublethal doses, which can harm soil organisms without immediate signs of damage. I was reminded of my experience with quinoa crops, where minimal pesticide use on organic land resulted in the most successful yields. The book advocates for using manure and compost to improve soil health, but I raise some points about the importance of finding a balance with synthetic inputs. It's crucial to consider nutrient recycling and sustainable practices to maintain soil fertility. Another essential aspect highlighted in the book is leaving areas for soil organisms and predators. In the past, the focus was on maximizing planting areas, neglecting the value of unplanted spaces. However, these areas play a crucial role in supporting beneficial predators that control pests naturally. While the book provides detailed descriptions of various soil organisms, I admit that I'm not a taxonomist. Nevertheless, I'm committed to learning about new soil creatures each week to appreciate their roles in larger ecosystems. So the next episode that I did was 528, Testing Soil Health Without Soil Health Tests. While some soil health tests are getting closer to becoming a practical option, I'm still not convinced that they offer enough value to justify widespread use at this point. In my consulting work, I continue to rely on the tried and true methods, which include traditional soil tests, farmer knowledge, and my own observations. These established soil tests are based on chemical analysis, have historical advantage, and they allow me to compare current results to tests conducted years ago. The potential new soil health tests is undeniable, and their relevance has gained prominence as farmers increasingly prioritize practices that enhance and maintain soil health. The objectives of soil health testing align with those of traditional soil testing programs, which is to aim to find indicators that accurately represent the soil's condition. The ideal indicators are easy to measure, compatible with other indicators, accessible, repeatable, cost-effective, and comparable across different regions. However, the landscape of soil health testing is still evolving, and I have reservations about some of the new tests, such as organic carbon, carbon mineralization, and aggregate stability. While these tests show promise, the numbers they produce lack clear interpretation guidelines. Until thorough research establishes practical guidelines and recommendations for farmers to adjust their practices accordingly, I prefer to rely on the familiar and established methods. To formalize and structure my soil health assessment, I follow a 6-question flowchart created by Dr. Andrew McGuire. The flowchart covers essential aspects of soil health, including erosion concerns, water absorption, drainage, soil crusting, nutrient flow, and plant health. Addressing these key aspects ensures a systematic evaluation and allows for targeted improvements to enhance overall soil health. Then my most recent episode was 529, Breeding Research and Policy, where I go over the regenerative agriculture news. There were a lot of articles, so it's just a very quick summary of each article here. Number one, genetically modified techniques are explored to make potatoes resistant to late blight, reducing the need for expensive chemical applications. The potential benefits to the environment and worker safety are promising. A new soybean variety containing pork protein raises ethical questions about genetic modification, with proponents seeking potential efficiency gains, but critics questioning its necessity and impact on the food systems. Researchers investigate the cooperative nature of plants through genome analysis to optimize breeding techniques. Debate continues on whether plants are naturally cooperative or competitive in nature. A shift in crop breeding focuses on maximum yield to human nutrition and climate resilience. A program in the United States aims to breed crops better suited for people and sustainable agriculture. Number five, challenges arise in accurately predicting nutrient release in manure and cover crops, leading to uncertainties in nutrient management and potential environmental consequences. Number six, intercropping chickpeas and flax shows promise in reducing ashcata blight, offering potential regenerative solution to disease management in crops. Food companies' interest in intercropping for climate-friendly branding raises questions about the true environmental benefits and farmer compensation for implementing regenerative practices. The study examines the risk of simultaneous crop failures and highlights the importance of adopting regenerative practices to build resilience against climate uncertainties. The emergence of sustainability indexes and standards boards impacts agriculture, which raises concern about genuine sustainability versus greenwashing. And finally, potato growers express concerns about aligning with industry climate goals without receiving adequate benefits, and they advocate for a more equitable approach to adopting regenerative practices. So just before I finish, I just want to highlight some of my services. I can help you with the Sustainable CAP, which is Sustainable Canadian Agriculture Partnership. There's a lot of things in there. It will be in the show notes. There's new technology, farm security, grain handling, working on pivots, drip irrigation, digging wells or water supplies, food safety plans, riparian areas, fencing, using legumes and or establishing them in your pastures, adding shelter belts, intercropping, and even the cocktail blends for green manures or forages. So I want to remind you of my course, Cover Crops for the Prairies. You learn when and when not to use cover crops on your farm. You'll make a cover crops first plan that covers the fit, implementation, return on investment, species, and termination. And there are CCA credits available for that. And finally, just if none of those work for you, or if you want more from me, I have consulting where the pricing is reflective of the independent structure of the business because I don't sell any products. I only provide advice. So I still will recommend them where I see them fit, but I don't make any money from anything I recommend. So we can work remotely, in person, combination of the two, but you're not tied to long-term commitments. I give you everything and you're free to implement on your own or with another company. But of course, I always love working with people over the long term. So thanks for listening to this newsletter update, and remember to subscribe in whatever way you want so that I can still come to you every month or through podcast every week. And I will talk to you again next month.